Counselor Accents Podcast. Two school counselors who love their jobs. Oh, and they happen to have Southern accents too. Bless their hearts.
I'm Kim Crumbly.
I'm Laura Rancourt.
And together we are Counselor Accents. And Laura, you know how excited I am about today.
You couldn't be more excited than I am. There's no way.
I literally have read this book front and back, and now doing on the speaker circuit. I added my name right down here and even put PhD.
You know, that is true. We did present a couple of weeks ago, and we used a quote from you guys. And because it's something we say, so we're like-minded with you guys, I put our name, but I also put you guys on there too. But it looked like I was trying to take credit for what you guys say. And Kim called me out on it. So it is like...
I love that, though, that we're like-minded. What was the quote? I love it. I would love to know what stuck with you.
What did we say? It was the critical issues conference in Alabama.
And we were talking about... minute meetings is what we were talking about. Goodness, I'll get back to you on that because I thought I had it marked right here. I'll be looking.
It was she actually read a quote from the book, and it was one of the slides, and she put her name down there, and we did it on purpose, and we're like, I'm like, Laura, no, you're not one of the chosen. Take your name off.
Oh, no, we love it. Look at this, like teaming together.
I know, but Kim did say in the session, she said, do you have that book? And since it's not ever any further than like 5 feet from me, I was able to grab it and show all of the participants the book. So if your book sales surged a couple of weeks ago, you're welcome. That was us.
Oh, so that's a quote, right? Their book is never more than 5 feet away. Can that go on social media for us? Oh, my gosh.
Yes, it can.
That's amazing. Awesome.
Kim, we have the Zoom party going on right now. We have the authors of Making MTSS Work. This is like the new school counselor Bible. I feel like this is, it's amazing. If you don't have it, go get it. But we are so honored to have you guys with us today. We have Dr. Emily Goodman Scott. We have Dr. Jennifer Betters Boobin. We have Dr. Jake Olson and Dr. Peg Donahue. Thank you so much for being with us. So the first question that we want to ask you, I'd like for you guys to tell us your story. So who wants to start?
Like, I think I can start because I think our story started with Peg and I meeting at a conference in 2014 when we were at an ACES conference, and I happened to speak up when we were listening to a presentation about the ASCA model, and I asked a question about how does MTSS fit? How do you see MTSS fitting? And there was radio silence.
Wow.
And Peg found me after and said, we have to connect because I feel the same way. How are we organizing by tiers? What's happening? And so Peg and I started to collaborate. And then Peg, I'll let you take it from there.
It's sort of one of those snowball stories because once I had, you know, Jen, you know, chatting up a storm, I think we may have skipped going to the next session. My advisor for my dissertation sat next to Emily at a conference and said, oh, you have to talk to Peg. And so Emily, I called Emily, it was in my first semester as a counselor educator, and I called Emily, she was in her second semester as a counselor educator, and Jen was the veteran of the group. And so the three of us started chatting, and we worked together to co-edit the School Counselor's Guide to MTSS. And I'll have Emily share how Jake got involved.
Thank you. And to backtrack a little bit on that as well, I remember very clearly, so I had reached out to Peg's, I was interested in, all of us did this work as practicing school counselors. So I remember, you know, back in the day when I was mid-2000s, when I was a practicing school counselor, I like to share this story is my school administrators, I was opening a brand new elementary school fresh out of my master's program. And they asked me to be in charge of PBIS. And to go to a 2-day training, and I wanted to be like a good school counselor. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll do whatever you want. But as soon as we hung up, I went and I Googled, like, what is PBIS. Like, I've never heard of it. I had a great master's program, but we didn't have any journals, articles in school counseling. We weren't having presentations. It's the mid-2000s. We didn't have anything. So I went to this training, and as they described, this is what it is. You know, it's preventative. It's using data. It's supporting the whole child, all these pieces. And I realized, well, this is what I literally just finished talking about in my graduate program. What is the purpose of school counseling? And so I remember sitting in my office, the practicing school counselor, looking through journals. I was like, why is there nothing here? Am I going nuts here? Like, why is no one talking about this? And I wrote, like, on a piece of paper, I like wrote the triangle out, and I pulled out my ASCII model. Back then, what version would it have been in? It was the one before 2012. What was that? Was it 05? Mm-hmm. Right? The 2005?
The second version?
The second one. Yeah. So I pulled out the 05, and I was looking through, and I like mapped the school counseling roles onto this like hand scroll, like, you know, scribbled piece of paper. But what does a school counselor do? And how does it fit? And so I'd been thinking, and I graduated from my doc program, and I contacted someone in Connecticut that I'd met, and I knew their work. I was like, do you have any interest in this? You know, PBIS and school counseling. I want to kind of get going on it. And she said, oh, Peg. And so hence, you know, Peg and Jen and I, and they had been doing the same thing. They'd also been having these same conceptualizations at their schools about how, you know, seeing when they were school counselors, how it worked. So we had very similar ideas at different places in the country. I'm from Virginia. Jen's from Wisconsin. Peg is from Connecticut. So we'd never met, but we'd had these thoughts. And I remember I was sitting in the parking lot of a sandwich shop, and we had a conference call. And then it was just like this like magic of, we had this similar interest, similar ideas, and they had started working on an article. I had a couple things that were in progress. And then we decided on this article that came out. It was a really meaningful one. It was this conceptual article describing this alignment that came out in professional school counseling in like 2015 or 16. And we just have started presenting. And then we're like trying to make, you know, content for our classes based on this article we wrote. And then we're like, well, we don't have what we need. Like, was there a textbook on this? And we couldn't find a textbook. We're like, well, why don't we just write our own textbook? And we did that. And then we're like, well, we need like a part two with even more examples. And then we did this one for ASCA that came out this year. And so we kind of did that. And then, and Jake, like our paths crossed with Jake as well in there. Do you want to jump to you, Jake, and talk about your story?
Yeah. So, I mean, similar to all of us, I was school counselor up in Washington State at the time. And I won the lottery out of my grad program. I was working with a district outside of Seattle that had done PBIS district-wide. And at that time, elementary counselors were kind of the coaches at the building level. And so as a new counselor, same thing. They said, Jake, go learn about this thing called check-in, check-out down at the other elementary school. And long story short, we started going down to Oregon all the time for conferences and learning from you know, some of the leading researchers in PBIS. And so I just became, you know, on the district leadership team and doing PBIS. And so for my dissertation, it was clear to me that I needed to kind of add to the research with school counseling and alignment with MTSS. And through that process, a conference, maybe it was in San Diego or something. I think I first talked to Emily, kind of the classic conferencing where you're just like, I've had, you know, 10 cups of coffee and I'm excited to talk to people about research, and hadn't really known Emily, but just kind of approached her and struck up a conversation. And as you guys know, it's so fun just to sit down and talk with her, and she's so supportive and engaging. And I just remember talking about MTSS and kind of the stuff that she's done. And long story short, she was always supportive and asking me, you know, in terms of supporting my research, and asking me what my ideas were and how to connect. And I got the opportunity to write the tier two chapter in the School Counselor's Guide to MTSS. And that was really my, I think, initiation into this group, in terms of being a part of it. And it's grown from there. So I think it's just been awesome. And definitely we have a shared passion for it.
And we've also been able to, I mean, things have really evolved. So over the years, we've done a number of studies, and we have these two books. We present all over the country, and all this work we do is, the overall goal is, how can we better support students and schools? We have a website, we have social media. But the overall goal, we've been very clear, like our vision is just to how to support schools. And we feel from our own experience that that we're able to best support schools more efficient and effective with their time, who's already doing work in our schools that we can work with. We don't have to be, you know, the school counseling island over here and have the rest of the school siloed, but who do we work with to have these partnerships? And they're already, you know, PBIS is doing this work, so how do we collaborate? And I did this really neat study looking at ramp school counselors that had had, you know, very effective PBIS programs, what was going well for them. So we've all just done, you know, we could talk about that all day, the research behind it, but the research and then how to just connect with practitioners over it. And as we've been connecting, we've added three new members to our team this last year, who are Damian Sweeney, who is in Kentucky. He oversees school counseling at the state level, and Dr. Rebecca Pianta, who is at Capistrano Unified in California, and she oversees school counseling at the district level. And then Dr. Natalie Enermanasinghe, who is at ODU with me, she's a practicing school counselor in Georgia as well. So we've connected with them and done some presentations with them this last year, and they've are now a part of us as well. So we're now like this family of seven. And it's just been a wonderful opportunity to do the work that we're doing. And this past year during the pandemic has been not only the pandemic, but the racial justice movement. And it's been a really hard time in our country. And I remember just feeling like we were going through this free fall last spring, all of us, right, as everything's closing and we're like, what do we do? And we had launched our website before, but we said, you know, how can we help? Like, our goal has been to help schools and students. And we thought, can we put out some podcasts? What can we do? Or webinars? Can we put out some free? What can we do for free and just put things out there? What do people need? And we thought if we can get some small bite-sized, like 30-minute webinars out. So we did like seven different webinars. And we did, one of them was a Facebook Live, but we just, and a lot of handouts and things, just as a goal to help serve the community. And we're hearing that people are showing their grad students and they're showing their other people in their district and that it was helpful. And in a way, it was this anxious energy we had about what do we do? How can we help? And being able to help through our trainings. And we did a slew of trainings just as a way to support, also like live trainings last summer to help folks going back to school. So it's been a journey out of our practicing work, but then this last year, a lot of how to help the field. We look at the anti-racist movement and how to ensure that school counseling and MTSS does utilize, not only utilize, but that this anti-racist lens is core to what we're doing and the systems work and, you know, all these pieces. So what else? What else have I missed, friends?
I'm wondering what other questions you all have for us.
But yeah, I have to tell you guys, your energy and your passion it matches your book, and it's, you know, when you see that PhD in your educators for educators, sometimes that comes across as dry as toast. And let me just say, we have spoken, shared this, like, get this and read it. We're like, it's an easy read. And I mean that. I mean, it's so practical. And you guys, just listening to your serve, and I always say a good leader has a servant heart, and I can feel that from you guys. I mean, you know, and it matches what I felt, that energy and that happy joy coming off of you guys. It matches your words that we wanted to help other people. And I'm so very glad that it's written in a way, because we're busy. We as school counselors, and you guys know, we're so busy. We need something that's practical and easy. And you've brought it. I'm interested to know where are you guys working now? Like, what hat are you wearing now? So Peg, where are you at, and what are you doing? What other hats are you?
So I'm at Central Connecticut State University, and I am the program coordinator for our school counseling program. So we have a large school counseling program, you know, I'm teaching classes. I'm engaged in research about MTSS. I'm engaged in research about the impact of school counselor ratio on student outcomes. I'm a mom of two teenagers, so that's a big part of my job. And you know, and I think too, you know, I think that the thing that drives me in all of this is I think we have to build that bridge between research and practice. And so I think that's a space that I try to, that's where I am. And the part about school counseling that I've always liked the best is collaborating, you know, and working with multidisciplinary teams and coming together and producing things that are good for kids. But yes, on any given day, I am wearing multiple hats. And now we've added, doing a lot of training online to school districts, to state level. I was talking to a group of school counselors in Pennsylvania yesterday, and Jen and Emily were talking to folks in Texas, and then Jen and Jake were talking to people in Guam yesterday. So we're having a great time talking about all things MTSS, but those are my hats. I'll toss it to someone else.
Emily, you want to go next and tell, I love the you're working on ratio. I say we hang our hats on pegs, kind of our passion. And so the ratio of school counselor to student and MTSS. Emily, how about you?
Well, thank you. You know, so mom, I have three little ones and spouse, and my little ones are 3, 5, and 7. So we're very, very active and out and about. And so that's a big piece. I oversee our school counseling program and have some administrative hats at my university at Old Dominion University in Virginia. I was on the board for our state school counseling association for 10 years, the Virginia School Counselor Association. And this last year, which wrapped up in July, I was chair of the board, which is one of my biggest professional honors, honestly. It was incredible. And just being able to serve, we had a lot of money that was proposed by our governor that finally, after years and years of incredible advocacy, we're able to get almost $30 million this spring for new school counseling positions in our state,
which
is incredible. And that's after advocating for years. And we have an incredible advocacy chair, the current chair and the current assistant chair of the board are tremendous. So that's been just a real love. And as Peg said, this wanting to and continuing to find ways to connect with practicing school counselors. You know, I work with we have a team that's our regional district coordinators and faculty in the region. So we meet monthly, just all of these opportunities. And through my research, as my identity is so grounded in my experiences as a school counselor, and my research, I do a lot of qualitative research where I get to interview and hear the voices of people in the field. So my goal, like Peg, is to look at what's happening and be able to advocate. Probably my most, and that's through MTSS, but also, you know, I did a really powerful study and we're doing a follow-up now on 504s. A school counselor said that really gets in the way of us doing our jobs. And probably the most powerful study that I've done.
Great.
504s, right? And advocating and realizing, like, when you're doing more 504s, your school, your service, your counseling is going down. We actually have a quantitative study. And that's some of the findings we're finding. The direct student services go down and the 504 goes up. And we know that anecdotally, but if we have research to tell your principal, you want me to be in charge of 504s? Well, look at what you're going to lose. My ability to counsel and to work with families, et cetera. So, but probably what's been the most meaningful is with a colleague here at ODU, we did a study on lockdown drills and what happens during these active shooter lockdown drills. And we did a series of many focus groups with practicing school counselors, and the stories they shared as a parent, as an educator, as a mental health provider, I was horrified to the point of, you know, I could, you know, becoming tearful and even anxious sometimes hearing these stories of school staff where they're getting, you know, they don't even know if it's real, these simulations, but they aren't told it's a simulation, and the fear and the anxiety and the trauma. So hearing about these, but I was able to, we did a study, had a publication that came out, our first study, in the Journal of Counseling and Development this past fall, and another one, that hopefully will be out, before too long. But through that platform, I've been asked to advocate, on all levels, like local school safety committees, state level, regional, national, to be able to use this as a platform to, like, because there wasn't much research on this topic, and we've seen so many more lockdown drills happening in recent years, but we don't have data on it. So to use this as a platform to say that this is hurting our schools and our students when it's not done through a trauma-informed lens. So being able to use school counselors' voices and their experiences to help and advocate for them. So speaking of trauma-informed, if I could throw it over to my colleague, Dr. Jen Betters-Bouban, who has been doing a lot of work on trauma. But those are some of my hats that I wear. So thank you.
Yeah. Jennifer, what about that?
Well, so I am an associate professor at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. I'm also program coordinator. Our program is clinical mental health and school counseling focused. So I'm the program coordinator for both of those programs. I love to teach. I love to teach future generations of counselors in both areas. I love my interns. I love teaching our brand new school counseling courses where we get them into the schools so they actually know what the role is. Doing that shadowing is so important, and it's amazing to see them grow as advocates. So I love all those parts of my teaching job. I also have a family, so we always talk about how Emily has like the young ones and Peg has the old ones. I got the middles. My two kiddos are in middle school, and my partner works in the prison system, so he's a former public school employee. So we have very, very interesting conversations about
advocacy. And a school board member. We always hear this perspective from Jen, like, what does a school board member think about this and that?
So many different hats that we all wear. Go ahead.
No, I'm worn out, Jennifer. You have worn me out. Just listen. I quit because.
Well, and I have a tiny private practice on the side where I see where I see teens and adults, and it's just tiny. It's very small, but I felt like I needed to maintain that because a lot of the work we do is systems work. I wanted to maintain that personal connection, that counseling connection. It's really important to me to just spend a few hours a week just seeing people.
Yeah.
You know, you can kind of lose sight of the forest through the trees.
Right. And so, Laura, you barely get out of bed every morning.
I know. I know. I may still have my pajama pants on. You guys don't know. I'm not going to tell you.
Jen's also our social media maven. She keeps us out there, and Emily too. So
Love that. Yeah. And part of my passion is, of course, around MTSS, but it's also around trauma. One of my colleagues was my mentor right when I started in 2012, before trauma-informed became a buzzword, he just kept saying, Jennifer, you gotta get on trauma. This is affecting students. We need to make some changes. Wow. And so he really led me into understanding more about trauma. And I think it's critically important right now.
Absolutely.
Always been important, but right now.
Yeah.
It's really, really important. So taking that trauma-informed lens, helping teachers understand that, it's just a really big passion of mine.
Yeah. I'm afraid, Jake, to even ask you.
I'll be brief then. Yeah, I'm a parent also. I have a 2-year-old, a little guy. Oh. So that's my favorite new hat. I'm an assistant professor at California State University, Long Beach. So in Long Beach, California. So I'm enjoying getting to know Southern California. I'm the co-coordinator of our school counseling program. So like the rest of us, I teach classes each semester, and we do, you know, research and a lot of faculty stuff. I love teaching and our students. My research, I think this is my favorite like research group and weekly meeting that I get to be a part of. And I think for me, I've really started to kind of write more about and I don't know about specialized, but just spend the most time thinking about, tier 2 and tier 3 of MTSS and how school counselors, align and fit in with that. And it comes from, the work that we do. And I love how Kim, you said that, the book is practical and all that stuff because, that's what it's all about. And so for me, it's just bringing what I did in my district, which I think was exemplar in terms of alignment with MTSS. I just try to bring that into the research. Having a 2-year-old now and stuff like that, I feel like I'm just now getting back to where I can allocate enough time to start doing more research and writing around this stuff. But I think that's really my focus is tier 2 systems and practices and embedding like those culturally sustaining aspects of it to that work. So that's all, Kim.
That's plenty, my friend.
Yes, you
so,
guys.
So let's are... jump right. Huh? Let's jump right in. And what role do school counselors play in MTSS? What role do you, and then I know, Laura, I'll give you the talking stick.
Thank you, because you just totally railroaded me on that one. So thank you.
Can we just say,
all right, ladies, do we need some conflict resolution here?
I think
yeah, that would one.
Be so helpful.
Jen, are you going? You go, Jen.
I'm going to say leader. School counselors can be leaders. This is our wheelhouse. This is what we do. This is what we know. We are the social emotional experts in our building. We can use MTSS to organize our college and career and our academic support. This is who we are. Anyone else can add to that?
Well, Jen, you always say it just makes sense. Like, it just makes sense for school counselors to look at their work through this lens. It's just a framework. But I think it also is an invitation to link up with what's happening in the school and to shift the mindset, to be intentional and to do prevention work, to be proactive, to look at our data and anticipate or identify areas of concern and anticipate where to put our time and energy and resources, which are so dear in schools. And so it makes sense for school counselors to be at the table, when we're building systems and to have that lens present. When they started doing RTI at my school, it was all about the academic side. And I'm like, excuse me, what about the other side? I literally like pushed myself into a meeting. I was like, you guys can't keep doing this work without thinking about the social, emotional, and behavioral health of the kids. I'm glad I advocated. I think that we all have an experience around that of being at the table and keeping school counseling relevant in the current conversation.
So important. So important what you just said, Peg. And I know, Laura, it's your turn, but it makes me, at what point, Peg, did this become, what was the catalyst that caused the nation to wake up and say, this is a vital part of educating the entire child? What was the catalyst? What changed us to move into this?
Well, I think that No Child Left Behind brought RTI into the, common parlance in education. And at least in my state, we had a deadline by which we had to have academic RTI set up for kids. And my district took that seriously. They took their very best language arts teacher and their very best math teacher and put them to work. And I joined forces with them. You know, as I say to my students, look for the people that are there for kids that are really dedicated. And so we formed a coalition. I think that at the same time, PBIS was getting traction across the country. And George Tsugai moved to UConn, where I was doing my doctoral work, and was able to do some work with him and learn from him. And so I think that those two things happening around the same time, I mean, help me out, guys, because you might have a better sense of the history of things. But that was 2008, 2009, when a lot of that was happening, at least in my state. And we look at the map of what verbiage people are using in their guidance out of the State Department of Education. Are they using RTI? Are they using PBIS? Are they using MTSS? And every time we look at this map, there's more and more states adopting the MTSS terminology. It's more inclusive. And even the PBIS people are saying MTSS. So I think it's that shift is happening, just like we went from guidance counselor to school counselor. It better articulates what we're doing. I don't know, does anyone else have other ideas about?
And it also shows that we don't just address one part of the child. We don't say like, oh, I'm going to address just your behavior and just your social emotional and just your trauma and, just this, social skills piece, but we look at the entire child. And we've seen a shift. We've had more focus on prevention, on mental health, on the whole child. We've seen a lot more from CASEL. Peg, you do a lot of work with social emotional learning, and that's one of Peg's areas of expertise as well. But we're just finally, like, the pendulum can swing all over. And especially with the pandemic, I'm talking to so many folks in schools that are saying we finally have this district level committee on mental health. And they're inviting school counselors to the table, or we're getting more funding from the state. I talked to someone the other day, and at the state level, they said, we're giving you so much money. Do you think you can spend it all? towards school counseling and mental health efforts. This is in the Midwest. Will you be able to spend it all? We'll give you, like, you have, because she was like, we have so much. We almost have to try to figure out how to spend it. When does that ever happen in school counseling? We have all this focus on mental health and social emotional learning and the whole child. I think, you know, it's just been a time where we jokingly say here in Virginia, we're going to have more jobs right now than positions. And it's not true everywhere, but a lot of places they've been putting more money. And it's really, I think with the pandemic, they're finally acknowledging what we've been saying for years, all our advocacy. It's like this golden moment to say, like, we have been telling you this, right? We've been saying this.
As counselor educators, we've all shifted the way we teach people to enter the profession by thinking about the three tiers. My students put their portfolio together to be hired. They're putting together their things based on what they can do in tier one, what they've done in tier two and tier three. So that they know the language, they can talk about it. And our new state framework just came out, and it includes MTSS as an organizing factor, as well as the Ask a National model. So this prevention science is, it's very, it's all steeped in research. We borrow it from public health. You know, that's where the three-tiered model comes from. So it's not like a bunch of educators came up with this. They adopted it from public health, brought it into initially special education, then it became a general education effort, and then we're almost late to the party because school psychologists are trained in this, so it's really bringing school counselors up to speed, and that's why we thought having a textbook before we did the making MTSS work, having a textbook for our fellow counselor educators to really be able to do a good overview of all these topics so people are ready when they go out in the field. And some of our colleagues didn't have the advantage of being implementers or PBIS coaches when they were in the field. So that was really the impetus to have a textbook, which the accompanying MTSS, making MTSS work was really, it's a lot about the connections that, mostly Jen, Emily, and Jake have with all the school districts that they've worked with, because they have exemplary artifacts, basically, to share examples of what they're doing. And so it's an evolution, I think, because our textbook came out in 2019. We finished making MTSS work while we were dealing with the first weeks of the pandemic. To put a book out during the pandemic felt weird, but we had a lot of it done beforehand. I think we see an evolution, and it's all about school counselors being in that critical conversation.
Absolutely. The textbook, our first book, is like the what is it? Like, what does it mean? And the second book is what is it and then how do you do it? And the second book is all this making MTSS work that ASCA published is all about examples. So we have found these amazing schools and districts and partnerships with principals and culturally sustaining work that really advocates for students and uses data. And we said, can we please like showcase the amazing work you're doing? And so it was a gift and a treasure that these folks gave us their time and energy and examples. And we highlighted them in the book, and we're highlighting them even now, on social media. We have this schedule of putting samples of these generous gifts, these examples of a behavioral matrix, or, a sample of their team or their tier two decision making, this wonderful data model that Jen made, based on a number of different pieces. So it's just this very, we hoped would be user friendly, that people could look at it and say, here's an example, and here's someone who did it. And here's someone in Loudoun County, here's someone, in Connecticut, here's someone in California, here's someone in Georgia. And we just keep hearing that people appreciate because it's helpful. And that's what we want. We're school counselors, like, with theory is important, right? It is important. But we really want practical examples. Like, get through the theory and tell me how I can use this tomorrow when someone's having a meltdown. And how do I plan so we don't have the meltdown next week, right? So that's what we keep hearing. So I'm so glad it's been helpful for you all. It's great to hear.
It really has. And I know it's your turn, Laura, so I'm going to be quiet. But I do want to talk a little bit about the specific things in the book that I really think school counselors can action step. We call it, Laura and I call it rubber meets the road. And one of you alluded to that a while ago, just very practical things. And to put walking around clothes and shoes on some of these things that to counselors seem like they're up here. How does that, we want to know, how does that work in real time? You know, and I think this, the way you guys have laid this book out, it shows you how to do that. Laura, I'm giving you the talking stick.
It is about time. Oh my goodness. I was just going to leave. I was going to leave and let you have time with your friends.
That's it. I'm done with you.
I'm very good at conflict resolution, ladies.
We need you.
Use your I statements. Use your I statements.
Well, I want to park here for just a second. Something that you said, Emily, where you were talking about the first book and you were explaining what MTSS is. And I want to tell you guys a story. A couple of years ago, I went to a session at ASCA on MTSS, and it was brand new to me. I didn't know anything about it. And I'm looking around the room because everybody else was saying, oh yeah, we're implementing this in our school. And I was like, we're the only people that aren't doing this yet. But if you will, if there may be one more person out there who didn't know what it was, maybe I was the last one, but would you mind just explaining what MTSS is? Let's start there. And then I have more. So Kim, don't try to take the talking stick back.
Jake, you haven't talked as much.
I was going to say, Jake, why don't you like jump in? Jake, tell us, unpack it for us.
Yeah. So it's a prevention and intervention framework, right? Where we want to meet the needs of all students. And then if students have elevated needs, we want to be able to provide those interventions and supports, right? So, you know, in a little bit more around that, there's systems that are embedded in that, right? So there's things like teams, there's things like looking at data, there's decision-making type processes, there's also practices, right? So that's the interventions that we provided each chair. And then data is really woven throughout all of that. So those are some big pieces that I always use in terms of describing what it is.
That was perfect.
Anyone want to add?
I forgot, Laura.
Do what?
I said, I forgot. I jumped right in. Go.
You go ahead. You go ahead, because I know how you are. If you don't say it, you forget it, and then it never comes back.
This was just that aligning the school counseling program. I just don't want counselors to think there's one more thing to do. And the only way I can explain this is that you guys do such a great job in showing how they both are so interwoven that as you are working on your program or planning your program for next year, I think actually having read this book as I'm planning what I want to start doing, there were things that are just going to make it easier in other areas. So I don't want counselors to think this is one more thing. It goes right into the thing, and it just helps you. So I don't know if anybody wants to talk about how this aligns with what we already have.
Well, we always have a slide of work smarter, not harder. So that's
I have that underlined because Laura and I say that just about every time we speak. How can we work harder? I mean, smarter, not harder.
I want to work harder.
You can't work harder.
No.
And
no.
Jen, you and I talked about that last night with the Guam folks. It's things we're already doing as school counselors, right? And especially if we're aligned with the ASCA national model. We're doing school-wide initiatives. We're on school-wide teams and we're being leaders. We're also doing small groups, individual counseling, right? And then we're doing referrals, consultation. So it's things we're doing and doing really well. But what it allows us to do, like Peg alluded to, is we're plugging into what's going on school-wide, right? So now we're not just doing it on our own island. You know, I remember my first year, I was like, okay, this is all Jake's stuff, right? And I was the only counselor at the time. But when you start plugging into this school, then it becomes, I'm doing some tier 2 level group interventions, but so are a couple other folks, right? So other folks are doing some interventions as well. And together we can reach more kids. And I, you know, as I was doing my dissertation back in 2015-16, reading, you know, Peg, Jen, and Emily's initial work, I was just thinking to myself, you know, this is stuff that we already do, and we're aligning, you know, aligning with what everybody else is doing. And so we're going to have, we're going to, I think from Emily's article, we're going to maximize our role. And then I think Jen and Peg wrote, it's going to actually enhance and extend what we can do alone as school counselors, even as a team. And so I think that's, you know, to me, to us, it makes sense because that's what we did, but that's kind of what we're finding ourselves talking to a lot of folks about recently.
And I remember thinking, and I share this example often, is that I was the respect teacher, right? I was the one, and teachers loved it. Teachers appreciated when I'd come in and I'd do my lessons, and they, there were some things that would catch, and they absolutely appreciated what I did. But prior to being really integrated with MTSS, it was me delivering that. After, when I was part of that team, it was everyone. It was the common language. It was everyone's on the same page. We can all talk about what it means to be a learner and what are our values and why are we all here, so that we're focusing on the whole child and not just the academic piece. So I didn't have to be the respect person. It was, we're all doing lessons. We're all talking about our expectations. We are creating a community, which was an integrated school counseling MTSS program. Not one, not the other. And that's what was powerful.
I love that. It brings the school community together, because how many times, you know, as educators here, we're hearing every year, start of the school year, and how many times do we have like 3 to 5 new initiatives every year, right? Anyone? We're like, here's something bright and shiny. We're going to do it this year, and this district-wide thing here, and my principal's giving me this. And we have like committee fatigue and initiative fatigue. We're like, and I can't do another committee. I can't do another initiative. I can't do any more. And what I love about this is it's a framework that anchors everything we do. So is trauma-informed practice like another thing? Well, just, you can weave trauma-informed into your tiered model. You know, you want to talk about college and career readiness, you weave it into your 3-tiered model. What are you doing for trauma-informed at tier 1, 2, and 3? How are you doing college and career readiness for tier 1, 2, and 3? How are you doing school counseling? You're already doing your school counseling. You just look at it through tiers 1, 2, and 3. We're already using data. We're already supposed to be doing some evidence-based practices and leadership and systems change agents and all those things. We're already doing it. It's Peg had this great analogy. She talked about it like a bookshelf. Right? Do you remember that, Peg?
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to share that your bookshelf analogy?
It's I think it's just, if you think of every initiative you have going as a school counselor as something that fits in a binder, then you'd, you know, have 3 shelves on a bookshelf, and, you know, the ones you're doing for everybody go on the bottom shelf, tier 1, and the ones you do in small groups are tier 2, and the ones that you do for a few kids that have the most intensive need go on the top shelf. You know, tier 3, and there is some things that you might do, you know, reteach something you taught in tier 1 in a tier 2 group. But it's essentially just, how do you keep yourself organized? And I think when people get in that feeling of overwhelm about things, especially now, is that, you know, I'm always reminded by what George Tsugaya says is, you know, what is the smallest thing you can do that's going to have the biggest impact? So, for example, we were talking today about universal mental health screening, which is something we've done some work around, and we implemented in my school right directly after the Sandy Hook shooting, because I'm in Connecticut. And I think one of the big ahas when we were looking through the research is that when you identify something that 20% or more of your kids are struggling with, that's tier 1. You don't have to rush around and figure out, how do I make enough tier 2 groups for 20% of my kids? And even just something little like that, something where you, and it's not little because it could have really big impact. When you look at your data leaving this crazy year, or when you look at some sort of DESA screener or just information that you have going into the new year, and we look at 20% of the kids or more are coming from a family who, you know, someone was very, very sick or lost to COVID, or 20% of them came from households where a job was lost. You know, so thinking about a need that 20% or more of the kids have, as this goes into our tier 1 this year, it might not be next year, but this year we're going to do something on this for everybody, or emotional regulation, or you know, just grief, you know, thinking about, you know, that other piece of trauma is grief. And so how do we make this an everybody thing? And I think for me, one of the parts that is most gratifying is to see the mindset of the teachers around you shift. When I would hear a teacher say, when we were talking in a consult meeting and trying to figure out how to best serve that student in that moment, hear a teacher say, how did they do on the screener? You know, did they come up? Or I've been watching them and I'm thinking, you know, this might be one that comes up on the screener. You know, then mental health is health. Then we're not stigmatizing. Going to the school counselor isn't something that's bad to do. The school counselor is in every classroom. The school counselor is part of the fabric. So I think that when we think about what are small things that we can do that have lasting impact, it's not something that happens all in one year. We take these gradual steps. We have a slide where we have a person standing in front of two different people standing in front of two different ladders. And one has these huge gaps between the rungs. And when we're like, oh God, how am I even going to get to the first step? Whereas we have one where there's these small steps, you know, and that's a climbable ladder. But when we, you know, say we've got to memorize the textbook and memorize the purple book, and then we can move forward. It's like, no, you got to look at your school and see what is the smallest thing we can do that is going to have the biggest impact.
That is so good. It makes it tangible. You know, it makes it something that we can achieve.
It's an invitation. It's an invitation mm-hmm. to look at your school, your community. How do we make it more welcoming? Mm-hmm. How do we make our jobs, you know, more? How can we be more effective? And how do we help our kids best right now in this moment?
And be efficient, because we all, you know, we open both books starting with saying, We have so much to do. We were talking with Texas school counselors and we said, how many folks here have more tasks to do every day than you can get done? Everyone. I mean, we have these growing mental health needs. We have growing responsibilities. We have growing caseloads. And unfortunately, traditionally, typically less and less money to work with. So a big part of MTSS is how to be efficient and effective. So how to streamline? Do we need these three committees that have similar goals, or can we streamline them to one committee? So it's speaking our language, how do we efficient? And that focus on prevention, right? Because we know part of efficiency, if we're able to be preventative and get ahead of these programs and create a caring culture and a collaborative culture, and students and staff, their needs are able to be met, through, you know, these tier one or these school-wide initiatives, then we're going to have less need for these more intensive supports. Mm-hmm. So growing the green, as we say, tier one is green. How do we grow the green and meet more and more people's needs with this prevention that we're already doing as school counselors? What we've been trained to do, like we're the prevention experts in our school.
Well, I think too, it gets overwhelming because sometimes counselors, and Kim and I talk to a lot of new counselors, you come into it and it's almost as if they see it as check boxes that they have to check off. Okay, I've got to do small groups. I've got to do my individual counseling. I've got to do my whole groups. But this brings a balance. And like you guys have said, just to echo what you've said, it really does blend the academic side with the social emotional side. And the other thing that I was thinking about is when you have your annual administrator conference, this, you know, bringing MTSS to your administrator when all of a sudden you have a solution to everything. I mean, that I wonder how many administrators have cried tears of joy when MTSS has been brought to them.
Yeah, I just shared an example from my administrator yesterday, who in fact, once we really were fully implementing, he hired another school counselor.
Wow.
Because he saw the power and he wrote an article about how it changed his role completely. He is like the biggest champion because it just changed the climate, it changed the culture, it changed how he was able to do his job and how I was able to do mine. I mean, it's not perfect, right? This isn't like, right, we're painting this like, it's right. And it does, when you are working in concert with others, when you are collaborating, when there's a team, things change and things happen. So That's my story.
Hey, the better we are together, the better we are for kids.
Okay.
And every research that I've read about office discipline referrals, every single one takes up 15 minutes of time of the administrator on average. Some of them a lot more than that. And when you have an environment where kids can be successful, it's predictable, and it's caring, as Emily was saying, then you do see that better behavior, and kids are more available for learning more often, which is going to be something we're going to talk about a ton as we move back from after the pandemic, how to help kids be available for learning. And I think that when in my own school, when we implemented PBIS and we had fewer office discipline referrals, I actually got time to talk to my administrator about what was going on to try and get out in front of problems. And he got to be the curricular leader in the school when we were implementing RTI and new things were coming down from the state all the time. And so when you get that buy-in from administrators when they see it work, because it does shift how they're using their time.
My wheels are turning. Yeah. I'm listening to Peg, and we have been asked to speak about the relationship between the administrator and school counselors. And if we get to do that, I'm just thinking we may be calling saying, okay, we need these examples, but it's...
There's another quote that we'll use as our own.
There you go. Yep. I always tell my students that, your job is to build relationship with that administrator, because you can't do your work without it. I said, I've had principals that I would take a bullet for. Mm. And I've had principals I really wouldn't want to have lunch with. But my job was to make sure that they all knew I was there for kids. And I didn't show my cards. How do I help you make your vision happen? Here's what's on my mind. I never went into a principal's office about a problem if I didn't have a solution at the ready. And I think that those things came from my PBIS training. So outside of my graduate training, the training I got as a PBIS coach was the best training I got professionally before, outside of graduate school. So I think there's really good people out there in all of the PBIS state organizations, and people doing that work are really doing some of the most significant training and changing how school counselors are taking on the role. That's why we'll want to try to do it as people are in graduate school now. That's part of what we're thinking about.
And this implementation, so we're not going to lie, it does take a good bit of time at the beginning. While we love it, it does take time the first year or two, like building these systems, building the structures. What are your expectations? How are you rolling it out? Getting everyone on board. It does take time. But I remember in one of my studies interviewing, the administrator and the school staff and one of the school counselors, and they'd been doing this for 5 years. And they shared, they said, okay, it was a lot of work at the beginning. It was a lot. But 5 years in, it saves us all this time. We don't have to spend all this time disciplining and referrals and remediation, because we did all the prevention at the beginning. And while we had this culture of care and using data, people are happier. The staff aren't getting burned out. They actually were able to track less teacher turnover. The teachers weren't flying out of there anymore because they felt like they had more control and they weren't constantly reacting, and they had a better relationship with their students.
They feel like they're more effective.
They're more effective. Absolutely. They're more effective. And they're looking at those pieces. They're also having more staff that want to come work there because they say, I'm a first year teacher, but now I know how this whole system's in place. I don't have to invent it. And I know just how to plug in and what to do, because we're, teaching all the school staff how to be in a relationship with students, how to run a school. And there's so much research behind it. Lots of research about how to do it and all the positive gains for students in schools.
So guys, we are already at 3:00. I wanted to talk about the equity piece to this. And I know, Peg, you've got to go. would somebody address that?
But that's important. We have to address that. Can I jump it to Jen? We could all speak about it. Jen, you've had several articles. Do you want to jump in? And this is a huge one. It's huge.
It's
huge,
and it's actually what I've been thinking about, because as we're talking about PBIS, there are some concerns, that the valid concerns that some individuals have about PBIS and whether it promotes compliance over real kids, right? We don't
compliance
want
compliance over learning. Yeah. And
And so we don't want that, right? We're not trying to create little robots in our schools, or schools that are just all about everyone being quiet and doing their things. And so when we do implement MTSS, it's really important to get multiple perspectives. It's important to be really mindful. So having a family committee or a group of parents who you can consult with when you're coming up with your expectations for your school, really important. I know we tried to have a parent come in to our MTSS team. That's hard, and they don't feel comfortable. And we're speaking this language that they're unfamiliar with, that it's really hard to get real information from them. So offering spaces and places for individuals to provide feedback that are more comfortable and more relaxed and not so filled with acronyms is really important. My school had quite a large Latino population, and so we included individuals on our team who were educational assistants, who were classroom teachers, who were special educators. We translated everything into multiple languages. So really thinking about it from a cultural perspective, recognizing that while we tried to include diverse voices, many of us were white women. And so individuals would come in with these great ideas. Let's write this team of well-meaning individuals. Let's focus on manners. Here's this article I just found. And we had to look critically at that and say, I don't know if that's something that all of our families really would believe are important. Or we had an issue where we were able to look at data and we recognized that there were a lot of our Latino students were on a very long bus ride, and there were many, many bus reports. We could have situated that problem with students and said, bad kids, let's intervene. And instead, because we had data, we could look at this. We were analyzing what was actually happening. We saw that the bus was completely full, 3 kids to a seat, 15, wow. 20 minutes on a ride. And my principal was able to take that.
It's like hour long commutes. These little children are squished and an hour each way. Of course, I'd be hitting my neighbor too. I was 3 people in a seat for an hour. And these are 6-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's not equitable. And so we were able to take the data that we were collecting through MTSS, bring it to our superintendent and get another bus route at it.
Wow. Great example.
Bus reports, we weren't getting them. So we have to.
I feel Laura, this is just, go ahead. I'm sorry, Jennifer.
No, we just have to be mindful in our implementation.
This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh, yeah.
If school counselors, if you want to know more about this, please, this material's out there. These folks have got the name of the first book. Peg is holding that up. We're going to add the School Counselor's Guide to Multi-Tiered Systems of Support, and then the ASCA Making MTSS Work. So dig in there. This will change your program. Thank you guys so very
Thank
much.
Thank you. And if we can say too, Kim, jump in real quick. We can't speak enough how much this culturally sustaining and anti-racist lens is so important. We're doing a lot of work right now, things that we're putting out. We did a session at ASCA. It's one of their webinars. It's on their website, available for members, on culturally sustaining MTSS. And we did a similar presentation about a week ago. But that's so important to make sure the lens that we're choosing. As Jen said, most of the teachers and educators in our country are white middle-class females, and those aren't our students. So making sure we're not placing our values, and we're changing systems for the better to be more equitable. So please go to our website. We have resources. We're putting a lot more things out coming soon. Follow us on social media as well. And we'd love to hear from you.
We can glean a lot of practical information from these folks. When I say practical, I mean activities. I love that, Laura. You know I love Rubber Meets the Road. Crack this book open. Are both books open? There are some practical seven ways or activities or, you know, looking at other examples. It's all here. So, guys, we thank you. Or is anyone going to be in Vegas?
We were just talking about that. We've been accepted to present. So we're really excited. We'll be presenting in Vegas, where whether it's in person or online, we were asked to be to do an online and an in-person version. So we'll see if we're doing both or one or the other. But we'll be there in some capacity. So we're very excited. What about you all? Laura and Kim, will you be at ASCA this summer?
We're going to be there. We're speaking. And we would love to meet you guys because I'm in love, Laura. I'm just going to be honest. I mean, these folks are servants and leaders. Mm-hmm. And gosh, I would love to just glean some more wisdom from you guys. But thank you so much. As y'all saw, my lights go down and up and down. I have heard alarms going off. We call it the storm pit.
You made it through. You did it.
It's going off right now. I don't know if y'all can
hear
it.
You never know.
Be safe.
We will.
With the thunder, as loud as it was, I fully expected my 4-year-old to run through here, and you never know if she's going to have clothes on or not. So I was holding my breath.
I've been there too.
Well, it's the same.
Not me, my children.
It's the same with her husband, though, Emily.
So, woo, yeah. You never know. That's
great. Like a free for all over there. Guys, thank y'all.
This has been lovely. Thank you
so much
for the invitation.
Thank you, guys.
Great to meet you.
Thank you. Bye.
Kim and I wanted to share a funny story at the end of this, like we usually do, but she is laid up in the bed with a toothache, and I'm in the middle of what can only be described as a thyroid storm. Rest assured, you will hear about both of these stories later. But we didn't want to leave you without anything, so listen to this outtake and the way that Kim talks to me in front of our guests. And we will catch you next week.
Somebody thanked us. We got our reviews, and somebody said, thank you for bringing that awareness to them in our... Laura, you're still your cow neck. I'm not talking about your actual cow neck. I'm talking about your cow neck. You're going to have to do something about your cow neck. And your
we all have to do something about our cow neck.
You just keep correcting
pandemic
me.
Life, right? Pandemic life.
That's right. You keep correcting me as we go on. I may just need to unplug it and do like you, just use it for looks.